Happy Easter, and welcome to our Fabric Podcast. This is Greg Meyer, and for Easter this year, we are talking about Jesus and Sisyphus. Well, what do they have in common other than the fact that both their names end in U.S., and they both had something to do with a really big, heavy stone? Well, we're going to let you know about that today, because I think there's an Easter message in here for us. Let's start with Sisyphus, that ancient Greek hero of sorts who is known for the fact that his name is today used as a synonym of futility. Yes, Sisyphus was a king of Corinth who was well known for, let's say, getting ahead of the Greek gods and making them angry. And so what happened is finally the king of all the Greek gods, Zeus, condemned Sisyphus to Hades and rolling a huge stone up a mountain there. And every time he got to the top, it would roll back down to the bottom, and he'd have to do it over and over and over again for eternity. Like I said, Sisyphean feats are feats of futility that we get trapped in sometimes. And then Jesus, well, we'll get to that, huh? You probably are wondering why I'm starting an Easter message talking about Sisyphus. But I think both of these folks have something to tell us about what this day is all about. And I find it interesting and even a little bit funny that while Jesus rising from the dead, that story is the one that's most familiar to most of us, the Sisyphus story is probably the one that is most like our own. And both stories have big, heavy, practically immovable stones stopping life. Yeah, have you got any stones like that that you wish you could roll out of the way? Yeah, like what are they? I mean, you can think to yourself, make a list. I bet you got big ones, you got little ones, you got stuff that's inside of you that just seems to be in the way, you got stuff around you, surrounding you. What are those stones in your life? I'm pretty sure I know what some of the big ones are that we all share. There's the pandemic, isn't there? I mean, who hasn't been pushing that one up a hill for a year now? Maybe you've got job and income, livelihood nightmares related to the economic meltdown of the pandemic, or you're feeling the weight of change as racism and equity concerns work to rebalance society. That's been a hard one for us. What about the growing polarization in our political and social worlds? Are you overwhelmed and weighed down by the threats to our environment and the change that it's asking of us? And then that's the stuff we all hold in common, but there's that stuff that is unique to you and to your life, or me and my life. Relationships at home and school or work, it's your sense of meaning and purpose, struggles with your mental, physical health. I mean, what weighs on you? Okay, so then there's Jesus' story, right? Jesus on Easter, rising from the dead. He's been sealed in a tomb by a really big stone that has to be rolled out of the way. Okay, so we'll get to more of that. But if Jesus' story, the Easter story, is about stones rolling out of the way so life can't be stopped, and Sisyphus' story is about pushing a heavy load up a mountain with no end in sight, then I'd say Sisyphus' story is the one that's most like my own. I feel like I'm endlessly pushing against stuff I can't change. But I wonder if it makes sense to have to pick one or the other. Maybe they represent different experiences with the obstacles, the problems, the stones in our lives. Maybe the story Sisyphus' stone is describing what we end up with, where we get stuck. And the story of Jesus' stone, it's imagining what is possible. What do you want your life to be about? Do you want your life to be what ends up happening because it just does? Or do you want your life to be the story of what is possible and you reach toward it? That is a big difference. Sisyphus' stone is me on my own. It's about me and what I can accomplish by my own strength, my own insight, my own capacity and perspective. Jesus' stone, it's me, fully woven. It speaks of me being a part of and a product of something so much bigger than me. And if life, you know, if life isn't just pushing a stone up a mountain forever, but having that stone rolled away for me, then I want to know about that. I want a vision of my life based on what is possible, not just what I feel trapped by. Well, that story started years before the day Easter talks about. Jesus, he was a man many people pinned their hopes on. He taught them, he lived with them, he lived like them. He touched their lives and he brought healing and hope. And he also ruffled the feathers of the powers that be of his day. And as he began to mess with the status quo, those with the most to lose decided they needed to get rid of him. There were a few years of challenges, attempts, and then finally, an arrest. A mock trial, an execution. They hung him on a cross to die. Imagine that. What that day must have felt like. That time and place for those who knew and loved him. What could have been heavier? What could have been heavier than taking the limp body of the person who had inspired such hope and courage and vision and power and lowering it from a cross and unceremoniously laying it in a borrowed tomb because the Sabbath was about to begin and it had to be taken care of before the Sabbath started? It must have been like Sisyphus would have felt, mid-mountain, hungry, cold, lonely, his grip slipping, the stone rolling over him, and back to the bottom of his mountain again. But then Sunday morning, the Sabbath is over, and some of the women from among Jesus' closest followers go back to the tomb to finish the burial rituals. I imagine them talking amongst themselves as they walk to the tomb, the rising sun casting long shadows, heads down, voices quiet. They had to have been wondering how they could possibly do what they came for. The stone sealing the tomb was far too heavy for them to move. There is a stone, a big stone, maybe several of them. Stuff too heavy, too big, separating you from life. I'm sure even Sisyphus had days when he felt optimistic and he was able to forget about all the obstacles and the problems. That's what we do. Everything seems fine. But then I run into it again, and my optimism fades. It's back to pushing the boulder, moving the immovable. Okay, so that's a pretty dismal way to tell a story, I suppose, but you know, there is more to Easter than chocolate bunnies, and that is how the story went. And to be perfectly honest, that is what it's like for you and me a lot of the time. It's like we live in Sisyphus' world, not Jesus' world. The good news? Well, it's that the story isn't over. Those women, heading to the tomb, doubtful that they could move the stone that separated them from the life that had been taken from them, were shocked. Well, amazed and scared, the story says. The stone was moved. They didn't have to do it. How? They had no idea. In fact, they had very little idea what was going on at all. The tomb was empty and Jesus was missing. That's what they knew. Now, the story gets kind of muddy at this point, and various accounts of it have various things happening, which is not unusual in this era when documentation of events wasn't even a thing yet. And the point of any story was accuracy to the meaning of the story, not to its details. But generally, what happens is that the women see a bright, shiny messenger or two, or they see Jesus himself, or one of them does, and mistakes him for the gardener. You know, to me, that's a lot of confusion, but that confusion isn't a problem. It's the point. And that point is all rolled up in one line in the account where the two men dressed in dazzling white appear in the tomb with the women and ask this question. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? Wow. Now there's a question. Why do we keep looking for the stuff of life among the stuff that can't give it? Why do you and I keep rolling that stone up the mountain when, even if we could get it up there before it rolled back down, we have no reason to think that that would actually solve our problems? Maybe rolling the stone has nothing to do with what we're looking for. What if the life we really want isn't sealed up in the tomb that we keep knocking on the door of? What if it can't be locked away by any of those stones that weigh us down? Maybe life, the kind that is actually fulfilling, not just filling, that despite its imperfection feels deep down good, what if that is here, hiding out in the open all along, and we just don't have eyes to see it yet? Remember the confusion those women had? Why didn't they figure it out? Why didn't they recognize Jesus? And it wasn't just them. Over and over again, people see this come back to life Jesus and either can't quite make out whether it's him or not, or they just plain don't recognize him at all. Thomas, one of Jesus' main disciples, has to be invited to actually touch his wounds before he's convinced. And then there's a couple of disciples that walk with Jesus all the way to another village called Emmaus, deep in conversation with him the whole time, and they don't recognize that it's Jesus until the very last minute when he leaves. I mean, come on now, really? Don't you think admitting that you didn't know it was Jesus till last minute kind of undermines the whole idea that it actually was? And what about the writers? I mean, who wrote this story down? Why did they leave that detail in? Why didn't they change that a little bit to make the story more convincing? Unless it was because they knew there was something in this hard-to-recognize-ness of Jesus, this new living Jesus, that was one of the most important things for us to learn, and they wanted to make sure we got it. Maybe the truth is that the life you're looking for can't be seen by the eyes you had for your old life. You need new eyes. You need to look for and at something else. When all my eyes can see is the fact that I'm still stuck in the middle of this pandemic, that I might lose my job before things return to normal, that I don't know how we're ever going to stop damaging the climate before it's too late. When that is all I can see, I am not seeing where life is. Your old eyes, they wrote a script. And now you are using it to explain everything about the world. But don't trust your view of the future when you are stuck behind a boulder. You can't see anything from back there. Maybe that's a boulder you can come out from behind, that you don't have to push. Maybe things can work and do work differently. There is hope one wishes would be, you know, the wouldn't it be nice if only, like dreaming of getting Sisyphus stone to the top of the mountain and putting a chalk under it so it'll stop rolling down again. And then there's hope that one sees in the distance and rather than waiting for it to happen, works to make it so. And that isn't usually the product of trying more or harder or faster. It requires the reframing of the problem, a better question, changing what we're chasing, maybe changing how you see and what you do with the stones in your life. In the video version of our Easter gathering, which you can actually still find on our YouTube channel, our kids put together a great retelling of Mark Pett's story, This Is My Book, published by Knopf Books, by the way, if you want to check that out as well. Anyway, in the story, the author is very proud of the fact that this is his book, and he is writing it, and he is doing all the illustrations. But the first illustration he makes is a panda that he decides will be called Percy, and is very orderly and proper and follows exactly what he wants. But Percy doesn't see it that way and wants to have a part of the book and decides that his name is actually Spike and starts drawing other characters and doing all kinds of things. The dialogue and the illustrations get completely out of the vision of the author, who gets very upset by the whole thing until he realizes he doesn't have to control it all. And, well, you know, turns into a pretty interesting book. I don't know what it was been like when it was just the authors alone, but once Spike got involved, I think it became pretty fun. Sometimes it's best when everything isn't quite under our own control. What about your book? Is your book, your life, just yours? Or can it be our book? Ours not as in you get less of it than you wanted because you have to share it, but ours as in the book gets bigger than you ever imagined so that there's more for you and plenty for everyone else too. Our. That's what I see in the second stone story, the Easter one. It isn't about how the stone got moved. It wasn't that God or Jesus can do something that we can't do. It is about the possibility that God and Jesus are doing something, and we are part of it. It doesn't even have much to do with the stone. It is about life not being able to be stopped. When life feels like it's sealed up in a tomb somewhere, what if, instead of fighting my way out, I start looking for life in places it can't be sealed up? That kind of life may not look like what I'm used to. It's going to be hard to recognize, but that's not a problem. That's just an adjustment, and we can do that. When the stone I've been pushing so long and so hard up the mountain gets absolutely impossible, what if I realize that's not my defeat, but that it's perhaps my message? My message that it's time to push the stone around the mountain instead of up it, or that I don't have to push the stone alone, or maybe that I don't even have to push it. Now, don't get the impression that this is going to be all nice and pretty and everything's going to get solved and you can just get on with your life. No, that's the wouldn't it be nice wishful thinking kind of hope. The fact that no one could be quite sure if it were Jesus or not after he rose from the dead, but that they joined together looking for and living out that hope anyway, tells me that realizing hope is always going to be a work in progress. Here in Minneapolis, we have a pretty major work in progress around hope going on. We're in the midst of Derek Chauvin's trial. We sit on pins and needles, partly because of the chance that destructive riots will break out again, but more so because we know that this is a trial of more than some men who took George Floyd's life. The immovable stone we are pitted against right now is the trial of we, the people of the United States of America. Because the we and we the people has really been some of the people. And that has systematically left out others, destroying lives, countless black and brown lives. What does it mean to rid our nation of that stone? Well, it doesn't mean saying it doesn't really exist. It's already been rolled away, because it does exist and it has not been rolled away. The stone that does not have to exist is a stone of racism. That is a stone that the dominant society is so used to pushing that it doesn't even know it's pushing it anymore. But like I said, you can't trust your view of the world or the future from what you can see from behind a boulder. Speaking as a white person in this white privileged society, I and people like me need to let others help us write our book. Help us write a story, a future in which we leave that stone behind us so that it no longer stops life. That's going to be hard. It's going to be messy. We don't know what that looks like yet in our world or in our lives, and that kind of uncertainty makes us really uncomfortable. But as unfamiliar as it is, it will take us where life for all people is honored and respected and cherished. Life not stuck behind the boulder. And that's a better world. I'm reminded of an interview with Barack Obama recently. He was reflecting on the fact that everything solvable was solved before it ever got to his, or for that matter, any president's desk. So day in and day out, everything he saw was the stuff with no easy answer. It was all messy. Better and worse decisions could be made, but never anything that everyone would agree on or be satisfied with. Your and my lives aren't really all that different. Sure, we all have lots of things to figure out each day, but the showstoppers, and they are different for each of us, those showstoppers are the ones that are hard and messy without any nice clean solutions. They deal with our relationships, our motivations, our sense of contentment, clarity, and well-being. They have to do with systems and ruts that the world has worn in. We're stuck in them and we can't change them on our own. But just because we don't know how to get there yet doesn't mean we can't have a vision of that future. We all need a vision for the future. One that stones can't keep us from. It won't mean you can suddenly run a marathon, or that your dishwasher will empty itself, that you'll always be treated fairly, or that you will always treat others fairly. It won't mean that kids will always obey their parents, or that parents will always understand their kids. But it could mean that life, love, and even joy and fulfillment can't be stopped by what may feel like immovable objects in your and my way. It might mean that you quit looking for the living among the dead, that you quit seeking love where you thought it should be and start discovering where it actually is. There are a number of reasons why we call our community Fabric, but one very important reason is that there are lots of threads in this world woven together tightly and deeply, and we want to be a part of that. Our resilience and strength are not found on our own, but in life together. It isn't just you, And it isn't just me or even just you and me. It's all of us. Us and the pattern of the fabric that is bigger, more beautiful, and beyond what any of us can ask or imagine. And that wants and needs you and me to be woven into it. Happy Easter. Hope lives. Thanks for listening today. Fabric is a community in South Minneapolis and online that seeks to engage people with these conversations that matter in ways that helps them weave with their truest selves and with one another in this world and with, like I said before, that which is bigger and more beautiful and beyond what any of us can ask or imagine, what we may be talking about when we speak of the divine or God. We think that kind of life is pretty important, and developing significant relationships around it is essential. I also hope you enjoyed the music in the background of this podcast. Those are portions from the Aramaic Settings of the Beatitudes of Jesus, performed by Sophia. So special thanks to Dean McGraw, Karen Vogel, and Brother Timothy. You can find more information about these recordings at brothertimothy.net. So thanks for listening. You can find more information about Fabric at fabricmpls.com. And if you go to /contact, you can have a place to leave comments and questions and prayer concerns, whatever you might want to, and also have a place to give in which you can support the work that we do together. So thank you, and join us next week as we start a new series of podcasts called Enough.